This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon from Arts Partners of Central Illinois. We are honored to have with us today legendary jazz pianist Ramsey Lewis. Ramsey Lewis and his quartet will open Peoria Symphony Orchestra's 119th season tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. at the Peoria Civic Center. Mr. Lewis, it is an honor to have you with us on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, I understand at this performance, there's going to be a performance of your very own Concerto for Jazz Trio and Orchestra. Can you tell us a little bit about this piece?
You know, I started composing seriously meaning more than one little piece at a time, as jazz writers would do. An album coming up, and you'll decide to put one or two songs on an album. Well, several years ago, the Ravinia Festival invited me to perform with the Joffrey Ballet, not to dance with them, of course, but to write some music. And I hadn't written any long-form music because they said, you can use the whole first half of the show. The whole first half of the show is about 45 minutes.
Mm.
Well, you know, I've been writing pieces that would be 3, 4, 5 minutes long, and I'm happy with the world. Somebody says 45 minutes. Well, long story short, I was struggling at the piano, and my wife came through our room, our music room, and she says, I feel your pain. What are you up to? I said, well, you know, I'm trying to get this ballet thing going. And she says, listen, you're not going to, you know, I'm thinking, well, I said, well, you know, Tchaikovsky, you know, the great ballet. She says, no, don't go there. This is how long ago it was. I had a Walkman on my piano. she says, turn on your Walkman, I've seen you many times just sit at the piano and play.
Yeah.
You know, make up stuff. So I did that. I did that for a couple of days, and lo and behold, when I started playing it back, there was a little something here, there was a big something there, there was a not-so-good something there, but it was enough there to get me started, and lo and behold, I had enough to put together a 45-minute ballet. And we premiered it at the Ravinia Festival with the Joffrey Ballet, and it was a smash. In fact, afterwards, my son came backstage. His dad, the first time I've seen you get a standing ovation, and you didn't play the in crowd, and you didn't play any of your hit records. I said, well, you know, having the Joffrey Ballet on stage is a help too. But that was a point well taken, that my compositions were accepted, and maybe I am a long form composer. So that Wells Kaufman and the Ravinia Festival got me started. And so along the way, I was invited to write some other long form things. But in doing so, I just was using manuscript books, and I think I was on my third, fourth manuscript book, which includes not only completed pieces, but it completed scraps. It contained scraps of pieces or a few bars of pieces that I didn't use. So when this opportunity from Wells Kaufman, once again, God bless Wells Kaufman, he said, why don't you do something commemorating your 80th birthday with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra? And whoa, well, all right, you know. And so I went to my main, now I have 4 or 5 manuscript books, and I found some things in there. And I started writing and putting some things together and became very proud of what I had put together. Now, I'm not an orchestrator, so there's a gentleman here, Scott Hall, who orchestrates, and he came over and he sat at the piano with me. And I told him how I felt and what it sounded like to me. Maybe strings here, maybe not. And he said, no, you don't want strings here. So we went back and forth until we said, okay. And he orchestrated it. And the night of the concert, well, before the night of the concert, we had 2 rehearsals with the orchestra. And I don't know anybody that's played with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra that wasn't impressed with the orchestra. It was just a wonderful feeling, just rehearsing with them. And the night of the performance, it went very, very well. And so I'm now well on my way to feeling like I might be a composer. Maybe so, you know. So the Peace Jazz Trio and Symphony Orchestra, of course, is what we're playing with the great Peoria Symphony Orchestra.
You've touched on this a little bit already, but I always think of jazz as being more improvisational form than classical music. So where does this piece sit on that spectrum? Is it more improvisational? Is it composed in a more structured manner?
Well, we're not asking the orchestra to improvise. So whenever they play, of course, everything is very well written out. But fortunately, I studied classical music when I was very much younger. Only to say that I've learned to read very well. And there are many places where I'm playing with the orchestra as if it is a concerto. But there are many places also where, with and or without the orchestra, I am improvising and making it up as I go. So that's where the jazz part comes in. And it works very well. And working with Scott Hall and working with George, and his name is dropping my... I'm leaving his last name off at the moment, the conductor in Peoria, whom I was just with yesterday, and there it goes. That's what you get for being 81 years old, God bless me. And it's going to be fine, but he understands how the jazz improvisation weaves in and out of the tightly structured classical composition. However, Scott Hall, the arranger, the orchestrator, has written some syncopated phrases throughout the work that are very jazz-like. I mean, it's not necessarily Count Basie or Duke Ellington, but very, very jazz-like.
I find it so interesting that this description that you're giving for us of the Concerto for Jazz Trio harkens back to the Baroque and early classical era where the soloist would improvise and often improvise the whole cadenza, and that was an expectation of that musical genre. Nowadays, when we see classical performances, rarely do we see improvisation happen live on the stage. Is there a type of a thrill that you get getting to kind of connect back in history with this earlier form of classical music?
Well, I'm very aware, you're right, that there was a period where classical performers, soloists with orchestras, would get to the cadenza and the orchestra would sit there quietly while the soloist would play whatever he or she, whatever came to mind. And I did not have that in mind when I wrote this piece, however, but it just shows to go you that there's a close connection between European classical music and American music. And of course, I always say that America's contribution to world culture is jazz, which embodies both the written page and the improvised page. So here we have something in the classical field that used to be the written page and the improvised page that now still exists in jazz, American music, which some of it is written and some of it is improvised.
Listening to you talk about that reminds me that in many ways I think your piece stands in a long tradition of attempts to blend the classical world and the jazz world, a tradition that goes back as far as Rhapsody in Blue.
George Gershwin, God bless him, had the inkling to go up to Harlem and see what's up, what's happening up here. And you're right, he had the classical training, but when he heard what African Americans were doing up in Harlem, both melodically and rhythmically, it heavily influenced him, and that goes back into, what, the 30s? 1930s?
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a connection between Ravel and Debussy. I don't think they intentionally heard or copied African-American music, but that period of classical music also impressed, and many jazz musicians used what Debussy, Ravel, and others brought to the table, as well as George Gershwin.
Mr. Lewis, you've mentioned before in previous interviews that you are a romanticist at heart, and certainly over your wonderfully prolific career, a key point has been your ability to produce these beautiful melodies. Can you speak to a little bit about how a good melody works in any genre, whether it's classical or jazz or what have you, blues even?
Well, it has to touch the heart. You know, it has to pull on the heartstrings. Quite often, we as improvisers, we as composers, stimulate the brain, you know, we get very cerebral, and it's almost like, Mom, look, no hands, no hands, Mom. And it's very cerebral. Early on in my musical career, I learned to, it was not by choice, it was just, I learned to love melodies. It might have had something to do with my, I started studying piano, which is classical, at 4 years old. But at 9 years old, my dad, he says, you're going to start playing for our church choir now. Well, the church choir and African-American church music not only is melodic, but it's rhythmic. And it's about reaching out, touching. And after the performance, if you haven't both stimulated the brain and pulled some heartstrings, yeah, I haven't done much.
Can you just offer a little bit of perspective as someone who's been in the jazz world now for 60 years and has had the career that you've had, what's your take on where jazz is today? Are there younger performers out there that you're really excited about? Do you see in your own concerts a new generation of people coming to this art form?
There are a lot of young performers out there. The problem now with jazz is it's splintered off into so many different directions. You know, before you were able to say this is from the ragtime era, this is from the swing era, this is from the bebop era. But after the big band era and jazz groups broke down into quartets, trios, quintets, there was much more freedom to write and improvise. And it's difficult now to say this is jazz and use two or three words, because there are 10, 20, maybe even more directions, yeah, probably more than that jazz is spread off into. It's good for the musicians because there's a freedom to write and perform what you want. It's bad for the musicians because the audience that we play to are not music majors. If you get too intellectual, as if you're playing to your fellow musicians, look, Ma, no hands. The average audience who's worked hard for 40 hours and now they just want to be sort of entertained, if you will. Mm-hmm. But you must be careful. So I think we split it off into so many different directions that we confuse the jazz audience. Therefore, there are a lot of people in our jazz audience that we used to count on coming to see us that got confused so many times and spent their hard-earned money on cover charges and a couple beers or whatever. They're now saying, well, let's go to a movie. Let's go to a Broadway play. There's so many different forms of entertainment now that it has taken its toll on jazz. However, having said that, the Jazz Education Network is a network of about 500,000 high school and college kids. Get that. Man, it's just mind-blowing. Every year, there's at least 500,000 of these kids playing jazz, and they do concerts. They mainly concertize around Utah and those two or three states around there. I just got wind of them over the last couple months because the question in my mind is, what happens to youngsters? What do I mean by that? When I travel, people come, I get phone calls, and my agent, my manager says, this school would like to come to your rehearsal or your sound check. Mm. Oh, sure. And so I'm like, what happened to these youngsters? Why don't they become consumers of tickets? If all of them don't want to become musicians, why, you know, if they become doctors, lawyers, whatever, dentists, what happens to them? So I started, you know, sort of looking around to see what the youngsters are really doing. And I found that out there in Utah, and those three, four states out there, these kids are playing to from 1,000 to 3,000 seaters. And they're playing to kids their own age. I mean, kids in their late teens, early 20s, middle 20s. and they're buying tickets, and the performers are teens, and they, when they found out that I was interested in what they're doing, they invited me to come be a part of what they're doing. So I want to find out how we can parlay these kids across the country into becoming consumers, if not performers.
Well, Mr. Lewis, no doubt you've made a big impression on the youth of this nation and the world. You mentioned that it wasn't too many years ago that you first partnered with a symphony orchestra and went into this realm of long composition, which we're so glad that you did. I'm curious, is there still maybe a little bit of an extra edge to your excitement when you walk on the stage with the symphony orchestra behind you to perform?
There's a little bit of edge and excitement when I walk on the stage, period. Whether it's to play solo, whether it's to play with the quartet, whether it's to play with the symphony orchestra, it's the challenge of communicating with the musicians on stage, whether it be four of us or whether it's 110 of us, and knowing that whatever we do on stage, we've got to reach out and touch the audience, and the audience becomes one with us. So as you stand in the curtains or the wings and you're waiting for your name to be announced, you know, it's not nervousness. I'm way past being nervous. Mm-hmm. But there's the anticipation. And it's like the coach saying, all right, Ramsey, you're up to bat. You know, go out there and hit a triple or a home run and see what you can do. We've got a sold-out house. So see what you can do, Ramsey. And that's the way I feel.
We've been talking with Ramsey Lewis. The Ramsey Lewis Quartet is performing with the Peoria Symphony Orchestra in a concert tomorrow night at 8 in the Peoria Civic Center Theater. Mr. Lewis, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being with us.
I enjoyed it. Look forward to seeing you.
This Sunday at 6 p.m., you can hear John Miller and the Romaniacs and the Central Illinois Jazz Society House Band starting at 6 p.m. at the Starting Gate Banquet Room at the Landmark Recreation Center. The performance is free for students with a valid ID. For more information, visit www.cijs.org.
And the Central Illinois Artists Organization is winding up their third annual members exhibit. Hot Chow is on display at the studios on Sheridan in the Sunbeam Building in Peoria. That exhibit continues today and tomorrow.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
And you can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.